It is Sunday, and we love to look at some of the issues of baseball, and we have a real treat today. We have Howard Bryant with us of ESPN, the magazine, and ESPN. He's a writer. He's on TV. The sports writer's on TV, and a good friend of ours. And Howard, how are you this morning?
I'm good, Marty. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Very good. Where are you going today?
I am going nowhere. I am home. I'm back here, and I am... I'm going to watch a little tennis before watching a little baseball, obviously. We've got the Indian Wells final, so I'm going to check in on baseball and then check in on some tennis and then watch the tournament and get ready for opening day before heading out to, more than likely, I'll head down to Florida to go check out the Red Sox one last time.
Boy, not a bad schedule for you today. And, of course, you educated me on Indian Wells and what a big tournament it is, so I know you're going to enjoy that. But let's get you on. A lot of things happening in baseball, and one that's coming up this week, and I want to get your opinion on it. And the Rays are going to Havana to play a game, a couple of games, against the Cuban national team. What's the significance of this? Give me some perspective on it.
Well, I think there's a lot of significance to it, obviously, for lots of reasons across lots of levels. Obviously, you've got the historical relationship between the United States and Cuba, and the loosening of restrictions and the normalizing of relations. I was fortunate enough in 2000 to go to Havana, which was fantastic to be able to take a look at a place that most Americans of a certain age have never been to and have never been encouraged to go. And it's a fascinating island. It's an incredible place. And I've been telling people, obviously, because of the Cold War, United States history with Russia and with Cuba, get there before McDonald's does, because then it'll just become another island. But the history of it is amazing. It's like a time warp when you go back there to think of a place that doesn't really have a great deal of American sort of Western influence. It's a wonderful, and especially obviously you walk around and you think about all the cars and everything, but also the music and the culture and the very difficult living that some of the people have there and some of the good living that they have as well and some of the things that we don't have. Obviously, from a baseball standpoint, it's incredible because you have so much of the history between the United States and Cuba is, the major leagues played a big part in it. The Dodgers used to train out there. And, of course, some of the great pitchers like Louis Tiant, who's thrown out the first pitch in a couple of days, and El Duque, Orlando Hernandez, and so many great players that came from Havana and came from Cuba. I think it's just fantastic, to be honest. I think it's something that every person, if you have a chance to go to Cuba, if you really care about the history of these two countries, you have to see it with your own two eyes.
Boy, great. Howard Bryant with us. Howard, it's interesting. Of course, we talk about the globalization of baseball, and baseball is all about money. And they're talking about maybe having spring training, at least having some more extended spring games down in Havana next year. And I think they'd support it, don't you?
Well, absolutely, they'd support it. The question, of course, is whether or not what does support mean? Does support mean people are going to come to the games? Absolutely. Does support mean that there's multi-million dollar luxury boxes and advertising and monetization that can take place there? Probably not immediately. However, if you're not going to find many places in the world that love baseball like Cuba does, and you're not going to find, when you go into the Parque Central right across the street from the Inglaterra Hotel, right in the park every day, you see all those old guys and they're there talking baseball. They're talking about Clemente, and they're talking about the great Cuban pitcher and second baseman and outfielder, Martin DeHigo. They know their baseball. They know baseball better than most Americans do. And so from a baseball standpoint, if you want to go to a place and cultivate a place that already loves the sport, there's no better spot to begin.
Oh, great. Well, Tampa's going down there. Very good recommendation for it. Believe it or not, I've been invited to go there next year with a group sort of as the baseball guy. We're figuring out when to go. That maybe it's New Year's Eve in Havana with Marty Lurie, or maybe a little bit later. But I think I'm going to be going next year, so I like what you said about it.
Well, you certainly should. And once again, as I've said, I think the sooner the better, because it's going to be closer to what the island has been for the last 50 years. You don't want to go 5 or 10 years from now. One of the things that's so much about being in Havana was walking around the waterfront, and you just look at all the incredible Spanish architecture, and so much of it was boarded up. And you can, you're thinking about it from an American standpoint, you're thinking, that's million dollar property, that's million dollar property, that's exclusive. And it's all just there. And you can just imagine once the real Western influence gets there, it's going to look like a very different place.
Wow. All right. But what about the baseball players that will be coming over? It seems like every other week there's a tryout of someone who defects from the Cuban national team. I think one of the effects of this whole thing is maybe they'll just become able to be signed and not have to go through all the shenanigans of establishing residency and all that.
Well, the president is already going through that right now in terms of, you know, working with the cabinet in terms of finding different mechanisms to allow players to sign with teams directly instead of having to go to a third-party country and all of that stuff. I think that very quickly you're going to see Cuba as a viable place for talent, no different than Venezuela or the Dominican and Puerto Rico or whatever. Because the players are already there. And so the history is already there. The fundamentals and the culture is already there. It's been politics that's gotten Cuban baseball away from Major League Baseball. So I think what's going to be very fascinating to see, just like you see with the Japanese teams, is what relationships do Major League teams and Major League Baseball, what do they create with Cuban baseball to try to sign players? I have a hard time thinking it's going to be as lucrative for those teams as it's been for the Japanese teams, but I also don't think it's going to be like you're going to swoop in and just exploit the place the way Major League Baseball has done with the Dominican, where you don't even have to pay these kids market value at all.
Wow. Boy, interesting. Well, nice to have you on to talk about that. Bryce Harper was in the news a couple of weeks ago, and I haven't gotten your thoughts about his comments and Goose Gossage's comments. And where does baseball stand today in the world of entertainment? And I know you're Howard Bryant, believe me, if you want to follow someone on Twitter, you follow Howard Bryant, HBryant42. Entertainment is all over the place. Politics, baseball. Harper says, we have an entertaining game. Let's have fun with it. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think about Steph Curry, actually, when I think about this. I think about the Warriors, and I think about basketball, because I've just finished writing a story about how I am so surprised and disappointed that some of the great elders of the NBA, whether it's Oscar Robertson or whether it's Charles Barkley or whether it's Isaiah Thomas, seem not to recognize that basketball is a different game than it was when they were playing. Basketball is not the same. Things evolve, things change. Basketball is an inside-out game forever, where you get the ball down low and then you work it outside. The Warriors have simply perfected a different way to play basketball. They play outside in, and a lot of the different teams follow that. And that's what the sport is right now. And the problem that I have is that teams across generations, or players across generations, have always been able to recognize the great players. And that they seem to not recognize that Steph Curry is still one of them really bothers me. And then when I look at what's happening in baseball with Bryce Harper, and you think about Buster Posey and the rules changing with the sliding, and then you think about Ruben Tejada and the rules changing at second base, and you think about the Papelbon and Goose Gossage and Bryce Harper comments, it's not the same game. It's a billion-dollar industry. It's a $10 billion industry. You know, and Goose Gossage, I'm sorry, but you played with Reggie Jackson. Don't tell me that showboating is something new. And Dennis Eckersley and all these guys and Pete Rose, they all did the same thing. And so this whole lack of recognition that the game evolves is disturbing to me. You have Buster Posey's a two-time MVP. You can't have this guy off the field if he's making $20 million. It's a different sport. And if those guys back then were making that same kind of money, then we'd be having the same argument. I think that baseball, I think Bryce Harper's right. I think, you know, I talked to Joe Maddon about this when I was down in Mesa a couple of weeks ago, and he said the same thing. He says, look, he says, the players 30 years removed from Goose Gossage's time thought that him and Don Baylor and all those tough guys were a bunch of wimps. Let's cut this nonsense out and recognize that the game evolves and that there are other things to talk about.
Right, great. Very good. Howard, can you stick around if I take a quick break? Because I want to ask you about a project you've been involved with Ken Burns, which is absolutely terrific. I can't wait to see it. All right, Howard Bryant will stick around. We'll take a quick break. Be back with more from Salt River Fields. Giants and Rockies coming up today. Baseball in the Cactus League. It doesn't get better than this. More coming up right here on the Sports Leader.
Talkin' Baseball with Marty Lurie continues live from Giant Spring Training in Arizona on KNBR 680.
All right, great to have you with us. Justin running the show today. Raf, of course, on the board. And Beer Can producing our show here at Salt River Fields. Howard Bryant with us of ESPN. Howard, you're involved in a very nice project. I can't wait to see it with Ken Burns involving the great Jackie Robinson. Tell us about it.
Well, a year ago, I got a call from Ken and Dave McMahon, his son-in-law, and Sarah Burns, his daughter, talking about a new project that they wanted to do. Might have even been longer than a year ago, about taking another look at Jackie Robinson. And taking a look, it's going to be a two-part series that runs, I think, April 11th and 12th on PBS. And they wanted to sort of go away from the baseball side of Robinson, which is a story that's been told many, many times, and to think about two of my favorite periods in history, especially with Robinson. The post-playing days of Robinson are really fantastic in terms of that conversation we have about a second act for whether it's, you know, for a ball player and what that means during the 1960s. Here's a guy who was a Rockefeller Republican who was as famous as any African American in the country, trying to find a place in the 1960s in a time of real turbulence. And his story and his journey, both personally and professionally, is incredible. I was really happy to be part of it.
Wow, great. I can't wait to see it. And of course, April 15th is the debut of Jackie in 1947, so I can't wait to see that. Yeah, you know, people forget about the life Jackie had. You know, we concentrate so much on the baseball life, but his life, of course, the great speech he made at the World Series in 1972 said he wouldn't be satisfied until he saw a black manager, saw someone in that coaching box. And he was vocal to the end, but not in a sense of being aggressively part of any movement, wouldn't you say?
Well, he was part of all the movements. You know, anything that he thought was going to move African-Americans forward, he was part of it. One of the great parts of the Robinson story, especially today when we live in this era of mythologizing and sainthood, is that when I think about baseball, and especially the cruelty of baseball as a business, we don't think about that today. I was having this conversation when I was down at spring training in Arizona about the celebratory nature of the sport now that Barry Bonds is back in the game and Alex Rodriguez is in the game and you see him on the broadcast and Pete Rose is on the World Series broadcast, is how the sport can decide to keep you or not keep you however it wants to treat you. And what people don't realize about Jackie Robinson is that when he was traded to the Giants in 1956 and before playing with the Giants, he retired. He never had a relationship with Major League Baseball until the day he died. That was it.
Yeah.
He was invited back to the 1972 World Series. But it's amazing in 2016 to think that a guy like Robinson, with his historical significance, had no relationship with baseball. He never, you know, and Branch Rickey worked for two more teams and never hired Jackie Robinson again. And so it's a fascinating documentary that really discusses Jackie Robinson as a person and not as a symbol, and you recognize the price that these symbols pay. We think that they have it, that they have this easy road that everybody is in agreement. Everyone wasn't in agreement about what kind of person Jackie Robinson was. And the truth of the matter is that when Robinson retired, baseball couldn't wait to get rid of him. They thought he was too much of a loudmouth. They thought that he was trying to push the society forward and to push the industry forward a little bit too much. And I think in a 2016 framework, we have a hard time recognizing, just like with Babe Ruth. When Babe Ruth retired in 1935, he had a really hard time having a spot in baseball. Baseball didn't quite want him. And I think we have to sort of remember that that these people have very difficult roads despite their celebrity.
Boy, very well said. Of course, when Robinson got traded, you know, he never liked the O'Malleys. The O'Malleys never liked him. And he was a Rickey guy. And that was one of the issues he always had with the O'Malleys. He never invited him back and made him part
That's
of the
right.
Dodgers. And that was one of
and
the
And when he retired in 1962, he wrote a letter from, I think it was on the Otisaga Hotel stationery. He wrote a letter to Walter O'Malley saying, you know, obviously we both were very stubborn and we both have our have our history and our truths. And it was really his way of saying, hey, I would like to make a reconciliation with you. And O'Malley never responded. Those two never met, and that was it.
Yeah, never did it again. Look, I was in Brooklyn, you know, so I know the whole story. And I still have his jersey hanging up in my bedroom. So I can't wait to see the PBS special. What did you say, April 11th and 13th, I think you said?
April 11th and 12th.
April 11th and 12th, great, all right.
Yeah, and I talked to Ken the other day, and we're really proud of it. I think it's really, you know, and I think the thing I like about it, Marty, is for me, I feel like I know a whole lot about Jackie Robinson as a researcher and as a journalist, and there were things in that documentary that I didn't know. So I think that there's a lot of stuff there for people to, they'll get a lot out of it.
Terrific, can't wait to see it. Now, you tweeted today something about Hank Aaron and the scout who discovered Hank Aaron.
I did. I was saying that one of the things that has always bothered me is when you go through your cell phone, you go through your contact, and you see the names of people who have passed. Like, I remember I ran across Bobby Bonds' phone number at one point, and then I ran across Ed Scott last night. It wasn't on purpose. I just kind of hit a button, and there was Ed Scott's number. Ed Scott was the man who discovered Henry Aaron and got him to the Braves. And actually to the Indianapolis Clowns, rather. And it was fascinating because I just remember talking to Ed Scott when I was working on the Hank Aaron book and him trying to convince Aaron's mother that he was a real legit special ball player. And that, you know, he kept trying to tell her that, you know, he's, you know, you don't realize what a can't miss he is. If he were Satchel Paige, we wouldn't be having this conversation. But I don't think you realize what you've got in your son. And she finally relented and said, okay, take him. He can play baseball.
Well, I love it. Boy, great to talk to you as always. I love having you on. Have a great day. And we'll catch up around the Burn special. And I want to get some of the your reaction to it when it's on the air. Howard, thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Marty.
All right. That is Howard Bryant. Boy, always a pleasure to have him on. That is terrific. All right. More coming up right here.